Yeah, what was I just saying about this thing not being that much?
But wireless is better.
What the fuck?
I have no idea.
All right, this is Pure Decking Show number 309 for Thursday, whatever the hell today is, June something, 14th. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, trying to figure out what the fuck is going on with my soundboard controller, and greeting the survivors in the wretched wasteland of modern paradigm, of the modern paradigm. I'm Morps, and tonight, I'm still trying to figure out this damn controller. Drinking a little Elijah Craig bourbon. And we have, are you, what are you up to?
Oh, drinking a large glass of audio failure for the entire week.
There you go. And Madman, say something.
I popped open the peach lambic that I purchased while you were looking at Bose.
Oh, yeah?
Yep, and I think this librarian needs to shank a bitch. I pulled up the article.
See, this is why I don't pre-read the fucking notes, dude. You give away the whole story. Might as well not even do that one. Throw it out, Morps.
I don't have enough stories today to throw one out.
No, I'm fucking around.
I'm fucking worn out from work. I found the news articles like 20 minutes before we started the show. Oh, for God's sake.
And in solidarity with the dude from Twitter, whichever one owned the thing that got, you know, framed for eating Chick-fil-A, I bought 2 spicy Chick-fil-A sandwiches. Everybody can suck my balls.
Dude, what is it with chicken sandwiches? Why do Americans hate the chicken sandwich so hard?
I love them. Have you ever had a Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich?
I don't think I've ever seen a Chick-fil-A. I don't know if we have them here in Australia. I definitely don't have one in my area. Probably do in New South Wales.
God, how long does it take to overnight? How expensive is it to overnight something to you? Must have a spicy chicken sandwich with no pickles.
But the amount of time it's going to take that thing to get there, I don't think he's going to want to eat it.
I'll put it in a Ziploc baggie, one of the freezer ones, so it seals real well.
Is it like a meme or something that I'm not getting to hate the chicken sandwich right now, or is there something deeper meaning behind?
Oh, there is somewhat a deeper meaning to the Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich. I'll tell you later, because it's not tech-related.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? Go ahead. This is kind of fun.
Okay, so the founders of Chick-fil-A are evangelical Christians. So okay. They support a lot of concerts and give food away. And their founder was quoted saying marriage should be between a man and a woman, back when the marriage debate was still going on. And June is Gay Pride Month. So this dude, the reason I'm eating a chicken sandwich now is the founder of Twitter got shit on because he posted a tweet of him eating a Chick-fil-A sandwich during Gay Pride Month when the founder of Chick-fil-A was opposed to gay marriage.
Still not seeing why people are hating the chicken sandwich.
That's just the whole reason. It's stupid.
One man's opinion. Okay. Wow, that is just fucking stupid.
Welcome to America. Really?
See you next year, guys. I'll be out there.
And when you're out there, pick up their sandwiches. They are awesome.
They're
not
best
a fan
chicken
of
sandwich.
It's either crack cocaine or MSG in those things. I mean, they taste great.
Yeah, they give you chronic diarrhea like half the fucking food over there?
Nope.
Well, we're used to it, so maybe. I don't know. There's a bit of grease in it.
It's deep fried chicken love, man.
I tend to stay away from any of your fast food joints. Just for the simple fact that your everyday family restaurants are cheap as shit and have great food. Good service.
Yes, they are.
Really fat people.
Madman, we're going to have to take him on a whirlwind tour of the shittiest. You're going to White Castle.
Oh.
Next time he's here, we're taking him to a White Castle. This is going to be fucking funny.
Jalapeno bacon White Castles, you'll die.
We may have a sod appear instantly when I say this, but I've been to Waffle House. I know what shit is. Waffle House next to a gas station at 2 in the morning.
I still, to this day, cannot believe how excited that man gets for fucking Waffle House.
No.
He should have went to the Waffle House next to the Waffle House.
You know, if he's listening back to this, he's probably salivating right now, going, "You bastards, aren't Waffle House."
it was so fucking funny when we were all at the thing, and there happened to be a Waffle House nearby, and it's like, "Hey, we'll do Waffle House for breakfast tomorrow," and it's like, "Oh, okay, yeah, cool, whatever." Except for Sarge,
going now.
He's like, "What's a Waffle House? We don't have them where I live." It's a little waffle point joint. It's, you know, kind of a truck stop thing. Next thing I know, we're eating every meal at Waffle House during this fucking meetup.
But I've got to give it, man. The two African American dudes that were working the grill,
yeah,
considered unskilled labor. No fucking way, man. I've never seen two dudes work a grill blind. You know what I mean? They're fucking taking orders that people are just chucking at them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Nailing it. They're throwing out 3-4 plates a minute and getting them right. Amazing.
You know, that's actually kind of funny you mentioned that. This evening, I ended up working pretty late. So on the way home, I decided, you know what? I've hit fuck it. I'm just going to get Little Caesar's pizza for dinner, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the cheapest pizza there is. And occasionally, it's actually fairly damn good. Usually, it's okay or even not that great. But when you're in the mood for it, every once in a while, it's great. And I go in there, and there's a whole bunch of people waiting in line. And it's like, that's not a good sign. So I ask them, do you have anything in the ready bin? They said, no. I'm like, all right. Well, how long is it going to be till you start having stuff ready? About 5 minutes. All right. So I order just, you know, pepperoni pizza. And the guy in there that they get, you know, they have, you know, the guy who was taking orders goes in the back and starts working on food. And I you come to find out that they had just had a children's youth group in there clean them out. So I guess, I don't know if you have Little Caesars, are you?
No, closest thing we got is like a Domino's.
No, it's not Domino's pizza.
It's worse than Domino's.
Yeah. But.
Really? Get worse than Domino's?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, it's a $5 pizza. It's the cheapest thing out there, but when you cover it, you can chuck in anything with enough hot sauce. So, anyways, and like I said, I'd pretty much hit fuck it on the way home. But I go, you know, so I'm in there waiting, and normally this place keeps, you know, a handful of pizzas just ready to go. So you just walk in there, order one, and leave. It takes like a minute,
yeah.
Which is usually the primary draw to go in there is it's $5 and you can just walk in and get a pizza and leave. It's like, all right, fine, I'll wait. And I'm watching this kid who's working there who's got to be like, I don't know, maybe 17. Younger black guy, I don't know, maybe not quite 6 foot, but, you know, bigger guy. He's just, you can tell, he's just fucking losing it, man. He's like having full-on panic attacks just because he's got a handful of people in front of me waiting on food. And, like, nobody's being mean, nobody's being mad. And he is just getting himself worked up more and more and more. And you can just see it, this guy's having a breakdown because there's like 6 people in the lobby waiting on food. And, like, 2 of them had their kids with them, and the kids weren't particularly misbehaving or anything. I mean, nobody was, like, yelling at him, and you could just see him losing it. And another guy came in and started ordering as I was, you know, as they got me my pizza, and I started to leave. And he, you know, I mean, you could see him. He said, hang on a second, I got to stop. And the guy goes, are you all right? You need to go get a glass of water or something? He goes, no, I just, when I get stressed, I have panic attacks. And I'm sitting there thinking about the amazing amounts of shit I'm dealing with right now, which I don't even want to say on the show because it'd make it really easy to figure out.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, kid, if you think having a handful of people patiently waiting in a lobby is stress to the point that you're having a fucking panic attack.
Yeah, the real world's going to fucking knock you for a six, buddy. You're going to have a bad fucking life.
You are not long for this world. I see in your future Ambien. Oh, my God.
Or that's
some kind of SSRI.
I mean, at 17 years old, being male, you should not be having panic attacks.
Not for what was going on. I mean, if he had a whole bunch of people, if he had 20 people in there and people were like yelling and screaming at him, okay, maybe. That was not happening. This was just a handful of people calmly waiting on them to work the fucking oven.
Yeah.
So.
And to be fair to him, probably don't know what battles he's got going on in his head, like from outside world. You know,
fair enough.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be fair. You know, but yeah, if you're having panic attacks, wow.
Yeah.
Good luck.
It's like, I mean, in this, you could tell he was legitimately, like, you know, he was trying not to hyperventilate. I mean, he was, you know, he was really getting worked up, and it's just kind of like, am I missing something? Nobody's, like, being a jackass. What is going on here? So, I don't know. But I just... if that's the future, man, we're all fucked. So,
Speaking of fucked, let's get into the show.
There we go. There's your transition. This one's from Krebs on Security. And I just thought this was kind of cool. In the days following the revelations last September that the big three consumer credit bureau Equifax had been hacked and relieved of personal data of nearly 150 million people, many Americans no doubt felt resigned and powerless to control their information. But not Jessamine LaWest, the 49-year-old librarian from a tiny town in Vermont, took Equifax to court. And she's now celebrating a small but symbolic victory after a small court's claim awarded her $600 in damages stemming from the 2017 breach. Just days after Equifax disclosed the breach, West filed a claim with the local Orange County, Vermont courthouse asking a judge to award her almost $5,000. She told the court that her mother had just died in July and that it had added to the work of sorting out her mom's finances while trying to respond to having the entire family's credit files potentially exposed to hackers and identity thieves. The judge ultimately agreed but awarded West just $690. The $90 was to cover court costs, and the rest was intended to cover the costs of up to 2 years of payments to online identity protection services. In an interview with Krebs on Security, West said that she's feeling victorious, even though the amount awarded is a drop in the bucket for Equifax, which reported more than $3.4 billion in revenue last year. The small claims case is a lot more about raising awareness, said West, a librarian at the Randolph Technical Career Center who specializes in technology training and frequently talks on privacy and security. I just wanted to change the conversation I was having with my neighbors who were like, computers are hard, what do you do? And so, okay, blah, 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 blah. So, anyways, so let's just round it up to 700. If every person who had a company leak their data could take them to court and get, you know, 500, 600 bucks, that cost is going to add up quickly enough that these companies are going to start taking their security seriously. The problem is it's one person.
We'd choke the courts up, man.
That's true.
We would choke the courts.
That is true. Let's just see here, though. $690 times, what was it, $150 million?
Billion.
That's $103 billion. $103.5 billion.
Why isn't there a major law firm getting, a class action going?
Because there's no lawyers that actually want to deal with Equifax.
Good point. Well, congrats. You know, congrats to the lady.
There are a few others. Further down the article, they talk about data privacy enthusiast Christian Hay wrote about winning a $1,000 judgment in small claims court against Equifax for its 2017 Teen Breach, and the amount was reduced to $5,500 after Equifax appealed. I thought there was another one in this article. I was only skimming it earlier. Anyways, she's planning on donating her money to the American Civil Liberties Union and hopes her case inspires others. So I like the idea of people suing these companies. You're right, though. It would clog up the courts, and it's not frivolous, but it is not exactly an efficient way to do it.
Yeah.
So.
Good on them.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I'd like to see more people doing this. Maybe not everyone who is breached, but enough people to just, make it obnoxious for these companies not to take this shit seriously.
Yeah.
Or if they were hit with punitive damages rather than actual damages. Because the judge could have awarded punitive damages as well.
Well,
I'm not sure what the cap is when it comes to small claims court.
Yeah.
But they could have hit with punitive as well as just actual.
Yeah, well, I'm imagining that's what's happening with the other case where they, got it up to a couple thousand dollars there.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think it's cool. I'd like to see more people do stuff like this and just when these companies fuck up, you got to take them to task. But what I don't like is the idea of the government levying fines, because then the money ends up in the government, not in the, because if people are suing the companies, then the people who were wronged get paid, not just, some random government agency that's going to go spend it on margarita machines and popcorn makers.
Or $60,000 desks.
Mahogany.
Mm-hmm. I think it was. $60,000, it fucking want to be. I want to give you a blowjob as well.
Yeah, no shit, right? So, I don't know. I thought that was cool. Madman, any thoughts?
Yeah.
Or anybody? Are you? Go ahead.
Yeah. Congratulations on those people. I don't know whether I'd personally bother having the time or effort to do it.
I'm not sure how much time it would take to appear in small claims court. I do know there's a filing fee, but the judge awarded her the $90 to go towards the cost of actually filing everything.
Yeah, so.
Do you represent yourself in small claims?
Yes. You don't need a lawyer for small claims. That's okay. Why she probably went to small claims. And small claims can go up to a few thousand dollars.
Yeah, she originally asked for like $5,000 or something like that. They just reduced it to the cost of getting data protection for a couple of years. Which, I'm not certain I like that one. Because
data protection doesn't undo the damage. And depending on what's hit, you could have your finances tied up for a while.
Yep.
Getting it straightened out. So I'm thinking thousands would be equitable. Hundreds are just, she did a nice thing. Hopefully she never actually has to take advantage of it. And if she does, she's already had her one bite at the apple.
Yeah. All right, so that was fun. Let's go into this crazy thing in the EU. And this is from Motherboard. So, the formal death of net neutrality in the AT&T Time Warner merger may have received plenty of justified action this week from the numerous ways they will negatively impact free speech and internet competition. But activists, startups, and businesses alike warn that a new copyright proposal out of the EU has the potential to cause even greater damage to the internet as we know it. The EU proposal in question is an attempt to shore up existing problems with the EU copyright law. But the poorly crafted nature of the effort could have a profoundly negative impact on everything from your ability to share hot memes, there's a, to the survival of new startups. Yeah. Can't have hot memes if they're all copyrighted. Anyways, for example, Article 13 of the plan declares that any website that lets users upload text, sound, images, code, or other copyrighted works for... They just assume everything is... Well, I guess technically everything kind of is. For other copyrighted works for public consumption will need to employ automated systems that will filter these submissions against the database of copyrighted works. Such automated internet filters, whether policing speech, porn, or copyrighted material, not only routinely don't work very well, but they tend to result in rampant collateral damage as legitimate content gets caught in the poorly crafted automated dragnet. From videos that happen to have copyrighted music playing in the background, the they reference the Prince baby dancing fracas, to memes that happen to contain copyrighted images. There's numerous reasons for website users to upload copyrighted material, but thanks to many copyright holders, nuance is frequently a causality in the, a casualty in the copyright debate. I've had more than a little whiskey tonight, and I'm worn the hell out, so my reading skills may not be top notch. Meanwhile, under Article 13, companies would need to eat the costs of implementing such automated copyright screenings while paying licensing fees to utilize the underlying filtering technology. Sites then need to build an internal process allowing rights holders to routinely update a master list of copyrighted works. So, and it doesn't appear that there's any filter like based on the size of the website. Just any website that lets people upload shit has to have a filter on it, period.
So no sharing pure decking in the EU anymore.
Yeah, pretty much.
There's not a good way of doing this because copyright is nuanced. If we use an image of, I don't know, Terminator, that's copyrighted. Now, if we have him crushing somebody's skull we don't like with a pithy saying, that could be fair use, or it could be satire, or it could be copyright infringement. A machine's not going to know that.
Which is part of the problem, is that most memes do fall under fair use, because they're pretty far into the transformative work category. When you take an image still of a three-hour movie, put some text over it, and make it a joke out of it, right? I'm not aware of any movie studio giving a single fuck about meme images.
No, they usually like them. It gets their movies more views.
It's free advertising. So...
I mean, Rick Astley got a second career out of memes.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Rick.
Well, we do know that Madman was the one posting half of those fucking links, so... Just got really bored and drunk one evening and went to town.
It was either that or Harlequins, and only one of them gets me banned, so guess what I was posting.
I know this to a lot of people falls in the category of fuck it, it's the EU. But how long before we start seeing this?
The moment that the EU passes it, we'll start seeing problems from it because of so many data centers that are hosted in Ireland and England and the Netherlands.
Yeah.
There are a lot of data centers in Europe, and most of the major clouds, Amazon and Microsoft and Google, distribute out to them.
So, Google are going to have to pay their own money for this?
I don't know.
Because I could see Google just going, you know what, fuck it. We don't deal with the EU anymore.
It'd be a lot of work for them to pull their data centers out.
And I don't know if... I don't know how well Google would be affected, because other than... I know they own YouTube, but YouTube I don't really see... A meme. I see a collection of memes and videos.
Well, they've already got it.
Videos are going to be hit with that too.
Oh yeah, anything.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like somebody using somebody like Sargon using, some EU parliamentary stuff is going to get hit with it.
But there's no limit on this. It's any. I mean, any website. I mean, it's not just YouTube. It's like if you're running a fucking forum, right? Now you've got to have a filter on that forum. In case somebody happens to post copyrighted code or something.
Where's Reddit host?
It's all over the map. It's in a CDN.
Is it? Yeah. Okay. I was going to say, this affects Reddit a hell of a lot.
So, let's see. The only companies providing anything like these kinds of filters envisioned by the rule are in the USA, meaning that, in effect, the European community companies will have to send all of Europe's public utterances to machine learning filters run by American companies to decide whether or not they're a publisher or publishable. Writer and activist Cory Doctorow tells Motherboard. Websites like Reddit were quick to note that the 1-2 punch of unreliable filters and layers of cumbersome adherence requirements could threaten the very existence of many popular websites. This law does not anticipate the difficult practical questions of how companies can know what is an infringement of copyright, Reddit said in a statement. As a result of the big flaw, the law's most likely result would be the effective shutdown of user-generated content platforms in Europe. Unless such companies know what is infringing, we would need to review and remove all sorts of potentially legitimate content if we believe that the company may have liability. And while Article 13 is designed to punish any website that fails to filter out copyright infringement, critics charge there's no safeguards in place to prevent copyright holders from abusing the system. That's already a major problem with filtering content systems like YouTube's Content ID, which is routinely abused to the detriment of legitimate content. Groups like the Wikimedia Foundation have also come out firing against proposals, stating its detrimental effect, global systems. Of course, there's everybody condemning it. Similar efforts in Germany have failed. Many publishers don't think the link tax is a good idea. Link tax. Wait a minute. Back up. I missed something. Okay, here we go. For example, Article 11 of the proposal was constructed with an eye on making companies pay when they use even short snippets of text from news publications. Affectionately dubbed a link tax, the misguided plan is being driven by a handful of publishers that believe Google and Facebook are somehow unfairly profiting off their work. Under part of this proposal, websites that share content... I didn't see this when I was skimming earlier. Websites that share content would be subject to licensing fees for sharing anything more than insubstantial portions of content, something that also puts resources like Wikipedia at risk since the proposal fails to include a non-commercial exemption. Many publishers don't think the link tax is a good idea, and since each EU nation is left to determine the definition of insubstantial, many critics of the new EU copyright rules say things could quickly become problematic for commercial and non-commercial entities alike. This fundamentally contradicts the aim to create a digital single market with common rules, which is right there in the title of the planned law, notes Julia Rita, a member of the EU Parliament. Instead of one Europe-wide law, we'd have 28, with the most extreme becoming the de facto standard. The proposal's added cost and layers of burdensome new compliance requirements are also being lambasted by a massive number of internet luminaries, including TCP/IP creator Vint Cerf, security legend Bruce Schneier, and World Wide Web creator Tim Berners-Lee. Did you need to call out the titles of all these guys? You could have just said their names, and most people, at least reading this article, would know who they are.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Link tax.
Huh?
That's going to hurt a lot more than just user content.
Yeah.
Every news organization is going to be hit by that because they're either quoting a line from a reporter that's already done the story and then putting their own spin on it, or they're rebuffing a statement made by another news company.
Well, it's even dumber than that. Because what's YouTube, what's Google, Facebook, and anybody else who's a major, Reddit going to do when there's one of these news articles that demands a link tax be paid for, using any substantial part of their content and linking to it? Well, they're just going to ban that domain. So you just won't show up in Google search results and are in a Facebook news feed or on a subreddit link. So you will effectively cut yourself off from the largest sources of traffic on the internet.
Or, I think I'll come at this from another angle. What if they only enforce the monetary payments of sites that they don't agree with? Yeah, like, hey, you're fine, Facebook. Just put out whatever you want. Oh, what's that, Breitbart? No, you've got to pay. You've got to pay for that link. You know what I mean?
Well, Wimlaw.
Yeah.
I could see it. Go ahead, man. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no problem. I was going to say, I don't know how well it's going to affect the major news organizations right now because they have lawyers. But some smaller startups or something like the Young Turks, they have some financial backing, but they're not CNN or Fox. They could get hurt by this.
Well, what about us? I'm reading these articles basically verbatim. I mean, it's not quite verbatim. I tend to change things up or put news or put jokes in there or break them up a bit while we talk about them. But, I mean, is that displaying you know, and yeah, it's not insubstantial in some of these cases. I read the whole damn article. How's that
at
work?
At the moment, we're looking at this from a fair use point of view, the way we use articles on this show.
We also credit the links and the sources, so we're not claiming it is our work. Normally, true, this would be fair use. Under EU law, yeah, we'd be screwed if we were in the EU.
Good thing we're not.
We're not. Fuck you, Germany.
Fuck you, Brussels. Oh, hang on, I'm in the... Yeah. Oh.
You're not in the EU, you're fine.
No, I know, but I am in the Commonwealth.
Oh, yeah, but they're leaving. Just because the Queen's on your money doesn't mean she cares.
I don't know. They're talking about doing that vote again. They said enough of the Brexit voters have supporters have died now that if they do a revote, they'll probably vote to remain.
The Ramoners can't be allowed to win. You had your chance.
I tend to agree. I mean, you did kind of, you already had the vote. Just saying we're going to keep voting till you get it right kind of reeks of...
They did that to Italy.
That's true. Did it to, I want to say Ireland too, didn't they? Or was it Scotland?
Yeah, they did. I think it was Ireland.
It was one of them. That's a bad, confusing Ireland and Scotland. Somebody's going to kick my ass for that later, I'm sure.
Oh, you're going to get shanked. I would not venture anywhere, dude. See, at least Australia, New Zealand, we're just sort of like, fuck you, buddy. But, yeah, you confuse those two. You're getting shanked.
I'm not going to confuse if I meet somebody who's Irish or Scottish. It's just I'm forgetting my history. Sorry. So,
I still want to go to Ireland and order a car bomb. I have to do it in a bar.
Somebody's just going to do that. Dude, that's not funny. I mean, they're just going to look at you. That's not funny.
Either way, Morps, when you meet either a Scottish or a Irish person, just always remember, fuck the British.
Well, if they're hot, I mean, you know.
I see what you did there.
All right.
I remember this story now.
Yep, this article is one RU sent me, and is rather comical. It's from abc.net.au. High Court allows Milorad, how do you say this guy's name? Milorad Trukajaw. We're going to now call him Melvin. Even his picture, he looks like a Melvin. His name is now Melvin. High Court allows Melvin to sue Google for defamation over images linked to crime bosses. A man who claims to be defamed by Google has now been given the green light to sue the search engine by the High Court. Melvin was shot in the back by an unknown gunman in Melbourne in 2004, at the time of a series of underworld killings. He wants to sue Google for defamation after discovering that searches for his name brought up images of mob figures due to the shooting coincidence or coinciding with gangland activity in the city. The images wrongly linked Mr. Trukajaw with crime bosses, including Tony Morkabel. Mr. Trukajaw said he had only ever seen Morkabel on television and in newspapers, and the only contact he knew he had with an underworld figure was a chance meeting with Mick Gatto. These are all Australian guys, so, I mean, should we be concerned about any of these people?
Yes.
Okay.
We're not in Melbourne, so...
I'm not saying one thing, I'm not saying anything good or bad, just should we be concerned?
These guys they've been warring with each other since the 70s. And then since 2008, the Guardian, all those guys, I can't think of his name, Chopper Reed, they're all linked together. It's all that underworld crime stuff in Melbourne, and they've been killing each other for years and years. And if you're not involved, they won't kill you. But they will just walk up. Like, one of them was at his kid's soccer match on the weekend. Two dudes just walked up, executed him. They don't give two fucks, man.
At the kid's soccer match? Really?
Yeah, man. Yep.
Damn.
They don't care. One of the heads of one of the biker gangs... was just doing some grocery shopping, just whacked him in the middle of the car park. Didn't care.
Damn.
They it's like having coffee on a Sunday morning. Yep. They'll shoot him at the coffee shop in front of everyone. They do not care. But I can see why this guy was a little bit upset being lumped in with these people.
So let's keep going here. I was with my ex-solicitor, George Devereaux, who is also acting at the same time for Mick Gatto, he said. We were having lunch in Ligon Street on the way home, and we passed Mick Gatto sitting there, and we just shook hands. Mr. Trukaja's efforts to sue Google had been blocked by a Victorian Court of Appeal decision, but on Wednesday, the High Court ruled in his favor. He said he was over the moon with the High Court's decision in his lengthy David and Goliath battle. Mr. Trukaja first sued Google for defamation in 2012 and won. He began another proceeding after alleging that defamatory text, autocomplete predictions, and images showed him alongside convicted felons when searching for phrases such as Melbourne underworld criminals. Autocomplete predictions are the suggestions that appear under a searcher's text before they have finished typing. A Victorian Court of Appeal agreed with Google that the case had no real prospect of successfully proving defamation. But in 2017, the High Court granted him special leave to appeal against that decision. Google tried to stop the case in the High Court, stating that it has not published allegedly defamatory search results, and that the search results were not defamatory of Mr. Trukaja, and that it was entitled to immunity. But the High Court on Wednesday found there was clearly potential for defamation. The most obvious legal connection between the terms of the search and the response under headings such as Melbourne criminal underworld photos, Melbourne underworld crime, and Melbourne underworld killings, or at least some of them, are criminals or members of the Melbourne criminal underworld. The court acknowledged the argument by Google's lawyers that some of the images were not criminal figures, including a former Victorian chief commissioner of police and Marlon Brando in his role as the Godfather. Wait a minute. And Marlon Brando happened to show up. Okay, then. But in each of the pages on which images of such persons appear, there is also images of persons who are notorious criminals or members of the Melbourne underworld community or criminal underworld, coupled with images of persons such as Mr. Trukaja, whose identity is relatively unknown, the judge said. A spokesperson for Google said the company will continue to defend the claim, but would not commit further on ongoing legal matters. So, go ahead.
I just want to go on record. I'm not upset with you, guy, but you're one cheeky motherfucker suing Google for this. And I point out, example one, you were shot in the fucking back. Number two, you shook Mr. Gatto's hand. You're no Mr. Gatto, shot in the back. You just haven't been arrested for underground crime fucking ring yet, man. That's all this shit is. You're going to shake the hand of the head of the fucking underworld without knowing him. You know what I mean? You don't get shot in the back by an unknown person if you're not involved in some shady shit.
I don't know. If I had the ability to shake the hand of the Teflon Don, I would.
Shake his hand, buy him a beer.
Oh, God, no, I'm not going to buy him a beer. He's fucking rich. He's going to buy me a damn beer. But I'd shake his hand. That's free. It's like, I don't know if you're still murdering people, but you're famous enough, I'd like to shake your hand.
That's
fine. The dude is not innocent in this. He's innocent in being like having... Oh, yeah, I don't think he's innocent at all.
I don't know.
Cheeky monkey.
It depends on what the searches are. If it's coming up articles of people that have been shot and he's just listed here along with the other people being shot and the others are crime lords, that's not defamation. Does it actually say he's a crime figure? Let's do a search.
No, it's just associating him with them. So,
well, he got shot in the back and he knows Mick Gatto and he's shaking his hand on a Sunday morning in the fucking well-known crime, like, main district of Melbourne. Like, come on.
He could just be critically stupid. You know, just slightly too stupid to live.
I'm just saying, dude, you don't get shot in this country if you ain't done nothing.
Yeah, bullets are expensive there. They're not like here where you can get a box of them for $10.
In America, you walk down the street, get shot in the back by an unknown person. I'm putting it down to bad luck, bad timing. You get shot in the back in Melbourne after you've been associated with Mick Gatto, and you're getting shot in the back. You ain't guilt-free, brother.
Fair enough.
Googling his name right now. What results do we have?
I mean, okay, if you want to expand this out. To be fair, if you punched in child rapist and Madman's picture showed up, I'd be, I mean, I'm sure Madman would be pretty upset about that.
Yeah.
Oh, but if you were to type in pedo stash and a famous actor pops up, because that's a reference to the Big Lebowski and the Jesus is pedo stash, does he have a claim? He is being called a pedophile.
I don't know, because he was an actor portraying a pedophile in a movie. They actually showed the character going door to door to inform people that he was a sex offender. I'm not certain how that works in that instance, because you've put out media kind of claiming that.
Fictional character, is Bob a pedophile because he played one on TV?
Depends on how convincing of the act, how convincing of acting he did, and what country they filmed it in.
Okay, Google's totally ruined my experiment. Everything's about him suing them. Fuck you, Google. Okay. Duck, duck, go.
Try Sirix. Anyways, so I mean, I can understand why you would be upset if, you know, your name showed up for a search term that wasn't exactly flattering. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know. I mean, is suing Google the best way to deal with it if, you know, child rapist, you know, shows up, pulls up a picture of you, I mean, and you're not a convicted child rapist?
I suppose it would have a big impact on the job search market.
Oh, yeah. That could actually be a real problem. Especially if it's not true.
Yeah, I know you're going to look me up, Mr. HR guy, just to let you know.
If you...
You know what I mean? It's not... It's totally not true. You got to believe it. Google it. Just fucking shit up.
Oh, there's some and horrible jokes to
Vault
make.
Vault has a somewhat correct affirmation, depending on the laws of the country. Of course Bob is guilty. Guilty until proven innocent, right?
Certainly in the court of public opinion.
Look, all I'm saying, you're getting shot in the back, you're shaking the hand of the number one crime figure. Yeah, people are going to make assumptions anyway. You know what I mean?
Oh, he's also being linked to funding LinkedIn. Okay. That's got to be a different dude.
I don't know. I could see LinkedIn being involved with criminal enterprises.
Yeah, I could too.
It's like, what's your experience? Well, you know, I spent 5 years as a systems analyst and 6 years as a hitman. I mean, you know, it's... Man, that'd be an interesting resume. Somebody who went from IT into mafia work.
I could see it.
I started out cleaning up people's credit history, and then... they needed somebody whacked, and I was there and needed 50K.
Hey, as we say in Grand Theft Auto, 10 bucks is 10 bucks, man. Whatever pays the bills.
Well, speaking of paying the bills, next one is from Bleeping Computer. A group of hackers has stolen over $20 million worth of Ethereum from Ethereum-based apps and mining rigs. Chinese cybersecurity firm Qianhu 360 NetLab reported today. The cause of these thefts is Ethereum software applications that have been configured to expose a RPC port on 8545. The purpose of this interface is to provide access to a programmatic API that an improved third-party service or app can query and interact or retrieve data from the original Ethereum-based service, such as a miner wallet application that users or companies have set up for mining or managing funds. Because of its role, this RPC interface grants access to some pretty sensitive information, allowing a third-party app the ability to retrieve private keys, move funds, or retrieve the owner's personal details. As such, this interface comes disabled by default in most apps. and is usually accompanied by a warning from the original app's developers not to turn it on unless properly secured by an access control list, a firewall, or another authentication system. Almost all Ethereum-based software comes with an RPC interface nowadays, and in most cases, even when turned on, they are appropriately configured to listen to requests only via the local interface, meaning that apps running from on the same machine as the original mining or wallet app that exposes the RPC interface. But across the years, developers have been known to tinker with Ethereum apps, sometimes without knowing what they're doing. This is not a new issue. Months after its launch, the Ethereum project sent out an official security advisory to warn users that some of the Geth Ethereum mining software was running mining rigs with this interface open to remote connections, allowing attackers to steal their funds. But despite the warning from the official Ethereum devs, users have continued to misconfigure their Ethereum clients across the years, and many have reported losing funds out of the blue, but which were later traced back to their exposed RPC interface. Scans for these ports have been Scans for these ports have been silently going on for years, but with cryptocurrency prices growing to record highs in 2017, multiple threat groups have joined the fold in search for easy money left exposed online. One of the hugest spikes in scan activity was recorded last year in November when a threat actor started a massive scan of the entire internet looking for Ethereum JSON RPC endpoints. Those scans were successful, and that threat actor soon identified that a version of the Ethereum wallet app was shipping with the JSON RPC enabled by default. That's not good. Allowing anyone to access the user's funds if somebody knew where to look. In May of 2018, Satori, one of today's biggest IoT botnets, also started scanning for Ethereum miners that were left accidentally exposed online. Those attacks targeted devices running on port 3333, but for most of these applications, the default RPC interface resorts on 8545. According to security experts from Quinhound 360 NetLab, at least one threat actor started mass scans for port 8545, looking for Ethereum mining software left exposed online. Those scans started in March this year, and at that time, the attacker had only made around 3.96234 Ether, which at the time was between $2,000 and $3,000. Revisiting the research today, the NetLab team said scans for ports 8545 never stopped, but intensified as multiple groups have joined in the scanning activity, with one group alone being more successful than most and managing to siphon over $20 million worth of Ethereum funds from exposed applications. If you have a honeypot running on port 8545, you should be able to see the requests in the payload, which has the wallet address, the NetLab team says, and there are quite a few IPs scanning heavily on this port now. With a slew of tools to automate port 8545 scanning and hacking available on GitHub, intentionally opening your miner wallet app service on 8545 is financial suicide. Nonetheless, with over $20 million stolen in the last few months, but just by one group, there are apparently lots of users who cannot be bothered with reading their app's documentation before setting up the Ethereum wallet or mining rig. Scans for port 8545 are only expected to go up as this group's success will surely attract more threat actors looking to make a quick buck. Owners of Ethereum wallets and mining rigs are advised to review their Ethereum node's settings and make sure they're not exposing the RPC interface to external connections. Set your shit up right, people.
Wow, that's impressive.
Well, I mean,
it comes with a warning label. Don't do this.
So think about this, though. This is a feature of the Ethereum protocol, right? Is this RPC port. And a lot of apps expose it. And most people probably don't think anything about apps exposing ports on their desktop because, you know, they're behind a router or whatever. But when you're setting up like an Ethereum mining rig, usually you want it on the internet so that you can check it when it's later, you know, check on it from remote locations, especially if you're like, you know, renting a mining app somewhere or something, right? So that, or people don't know what they're doing and they're just putting their workstations flat out on the internet and forwarding every freaking port to their machines. And so botnets are scanning for these ports without any authentication on them and stealing the money out of them, which, I mean, it's theft, but it's like, you know, I've left my money unguarded sitting on the front porch. I hope no one steals it.
I mean, yeah, it's genius. It's just sheer genius of the retards running these mining rigs. Like, it's money.
The developer did all they could. they put a big fat warning label on the distro. It's wrong these guys are being robbed, but to a bit, it's their own damn fault.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. If I should be able to leave my wallet on a bench in Central Park, stuffed full of $100 bills, and it should be fine. I'm not going to do that because I live in the real world.
Yeah.
And I know if I leave my wallet on Central Park bench, it's not going to stay there. These guys know if you're going to be sticking anything worth money in this program, secure that part. Oh, this is great. So I don't think we need to use any of your old mining software to mine anymore. Can we set this up to do port scans?
Yep.
I will volunteer my electric bill if you want to throw the rig together.
I actually already have some
mining.
You know what the crazy part is? You could run that kind of a scanner on a fucking Raspberry Pi. It's not the best way to do it. The best way to do it is to, you know, sign up for some shit like an Amazon or a cloud, you know, DigitalOcean or something, so that, you know, you've got a nice fast internet connection, a couple of machines with some horsepower on them. But if you're bored, you could totally do this with a Raspberry Pi and a Starbucks. I mean,
yeah,
it's a JSON call, and you're just looking for this port being open. So the first thing you do is run mass scan across whatever chunk of the internet you're targeting for that port to being open. Anything that responds to that port goes in the list, and then you just have a, you know, a script that's got your JSON call in it, and you just feed it all the IP addresses and just let it run and then look and see what shows up in your Ethereum wallet. And if you've set it up, you know, your wallet such that it's not associated with you in any particular way, and you've got a method of getting that money transferred out without identifying who you are, you know, I'm saying, I'm kind of glossing over some pretty important details of cryptocurrency theft there, but, yeah, there it is. But, anyways, any thoughts or next story?
Next story, man. There's not much more you can say about that, I reckon.
Because it's not the fault of the people putting out the mining software. They put the warning in there, correct? That's what the article said.
Well, the people who designed the people who designed the protocol warned them. Some of the people creating their own applications are dumb. Then they're just having shit turned on by default. But the people who built the software originally, you know, said don't do this. Because it's not intended to be internet exposed. It's intended for like other apps on the desktop to communicate with it and shit like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. All right. This next article, R, you sent me, is from the BBC.com. Children were left distressed after seeing ads for a horror film on YouTube, the Advertising Standards Authority has revealed. Do I even need to keep going, Madman? I mean, you sound pained already.
Of course they're going to be distressed. It's a fucking horror film. Watch what your kids are watching.
Sounds like it's going to be a damn good movie to me. I mean, you're giving children nightmares, right? So.
And it's already on YouTube. That means it's been cleared for all audiences. There's nothing else we can do.
Three parents contacted the ASA after their children saw the ads for Insidious, The Last Key, rated 15 in the UK. One ad for the film was shown before videos of songs from Frozen, instructions for building a Lego fire station, and a clip from the cartoon PJ's Masks. Okay, then. The ASA has held up the complaints. In a second ad, the ASA said a young woman was seen lying on a floor, immobile, bloodied, and distressed, while a humanoid creature crept toward her and then probed at her with claw-like fingers and pierced her skin. Further horror-themed imagery followed, including a sequence of women screaming. This ad played before two videos of Minecraft, a popular game with children.
Popular game with everyone.
I'm just envisioning, like, you know, you see a scene from The Ring where they're, you know, where her face is all twisted up, or like, you know, she's just cursed somebody, right? And then it flips over to Happy Tree Friends. I mean, just like. Maybe that's
okay.
Not
the, I wouldn't let my kids watch Happy Tree Friends.
That may not be the best example, but you get my general gist.
I was just thinking, a lot of the kids I know, if this is before a Minecraft video, they're like, oh, damn it, they changed the graphics. Look at the new zombie dude.
Well, Cycros is saying apparently Pandora plays ads for Adam and Eve sex toys. So,
I mean, wow. Fucking hell, man.
I agree. Use ad block. This is a good argument for ad block.
It is. But then again, if you're the sort of parent who's just sort of handing over the iPad or whatever and saying, here, chuckle fuck, go watch 2 hours of, you know, Minecraft videos, you're not exactly skilled in the wizardry of ad blocking.
Okay, let's you know, probably not the right person for this, you know, to state this advice, but I'm fairly certain the iPad is not a babysitter. You know, just because you want to go out to the giggly jiggly or whatever doesn't mean you should just hand the kid an iPad and walk off.
But I don't know what we can use this as a euphemism for, but I have to remember giggly jiggly.
Yes. I can imagine the ladies dancing at that club on a Tuesday morning are quite attractive.
There's going to be cesarean scars and bullet wounds in these ones.
And I would highly recommend staying away from the all-you-can-eat buffalo wings.
I don't actually know where that name came from, but it sounded funny in my head, so I went with it.
Okay, I don't want to go to the strip bars Ari's going to, because I've never been to one with an all-you-can-eat anything, and I don't want to.
That sounds like a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Oh, Cyclops is going on a rant in the IRC here. Use ad block, you're going to fund their platform. You're going to fund their platform. Don't like it, find another way, or don't use it. Wait till I get to Dojo, dude. You're getting ahead of me. Honestly, the only stuff is YouTube doesn't effectively target ads. Yeah, he's right. So, anyways, let's see. The BBC understands that. I'm sorry, I skipped a line. Sony Pictures and Sony-owned Columbia Pictures, which promoted the film, told the ASA they had excluded unknown audiences and children from their targeting. The BBC understands that a follow-up probe by Sony indicated that YouTube's content categorizing algorithms were at fault. The Google-owned streaming service, however, said the advertisers were responsible for their own campaigns. The video site adds that ads had not appeared on YouTube Kids, an app aimed specifically at children that offers a filtered section of YouTube content. We considered the ads that were unsuitable for children because they were excessively frightening and shocking and were likely to cause fear and distress, the ASA said in its ruling. Well, it's a horror movie, so it sounds like a good horror movie. The ASA also received 3 complaints from adults who found the ads unduly distressing, and it...
Jesus.
And noted that the ads had appeared before unrelated content with no warning and could not be skipped until 5 seconds had elapsed. I need the dramatic squirrel sound, but I don't have it on the soundboard. The regulators had told Sony Pictures to ensure that future ads were appropriately targeted. The firm has declined to comment. The BBC understands that it is now limiting its ads for mature content to a pre-vetted list of safe YouTube channels. So,
some adults found distressing.
I mean, either this is a really good movie, or there's a lot of people out there who are very overly sensitive.
It is the UK. I could understand they might get a little bit upset.
I like what Psychos put in the IRC there. Could not be skipped unless, you know, you close the tab. I like that. Yeah, just don't watch it. There you go. Problem solved. So,
I could see gripes that your children were exposed. Adults, their balls need to fucking drop.
All right. Next article is from the New York Times. A concentrated campaign of price manipulation may have accounted for at least half of the increase in the price of Bitcoin and other big cryptocurrencies last year, according to a paper released on Wednesdays by an by an academic with a history of spotting fraud in financial markets. The paper by John Griffin, a finance professor at the University of Texas, and Eamon Shams, a graduate student, is likely to stoke a debate about how much of Bitcoin's skyrocketing gain last year was caused by the covert actions of a few big players rather than real demand from investors. Many industry players expressed concern at the time that the prices were being pushed up by at least, or pushed up at least partially by activity at Bitfinex, one of the largest and least regulated exchanges in the industry. This exchange, which is registered in the Caribbean in with offices in Asia, was subpoenaed by American regulators shortly after the articles about the concerns appeared in the New York Times and other publications. Mr. Griffin looked at the flow of digital tokens going in and out of the Bitfinex and identified several distinct patterns that suggested someone or some people at the exchange successfully worked to push up prices when they were sagged at other exchanges. To do that, the person or people used a secondary virtual currency known as Tether, which was created and sold by the owners of Bitfinex to buy up other cryptocurrencies. They were obviously tremendously priced. There were obviously tremendous price increases last year, and this paper indicates that manipulation played a large part in those price increases, Mr. Griffin said. The fuck? Right in the middle of this ad is something about Steve Bannon. It's like, okay. Bitfinex executives have denied in the past that the exchange was involved in any manipulation. The company said on Wednesday that it had never engaged in any sort of market or price manipulation. Tether issuances cannot be used to prop up the price of Bitcoin or any other coin or token on Bitfinex. Juan Ludwig von der Wereld, Bitfinex chief executive, said in a statement. I've got to learn how to say foreign names better. We've been doing this for years now, and I'm still fumbling over these damn names. The new paper helped push down the already sinking price of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies on Wednesday. The price of Bitcoin fell as much as 5% after the report. So the guy writing the report was manipulating the cost of Bitcoin, too, it sounds like to me. Approaching the lowest price of the year, Bitcoin is now down more than 65% at the highs it hit last year. Authors of the new 66-page paper do not have emails or documents that prove Bitfinex knew about or was responsible for price manipulation. The researchers relied on millions of transaction records that are captured on the public ledgers of all virtual currency transactions, known as the blockchain, to spot patterns. This method is not conclusive, but it helped government authorities and academics spot suspicious activity in the past. In particular, Mr. Griffin and Mr. Shams examined the flow of Tether, a token that is supposed to be tied to the value of the dollar and that is exclusively issued by Bitfinex in large batches. They found that half of the increase in Bitcoin's price in 2017 could be traced to the hours immediately after Tether flowed to a handful of other exchanges, generally when the price was declining. I'm going to stop reading there. So, yeah, apparently Bitcoin's price was because of manipulation. Who wants to yell no shit at the top of their lungs?
I wanted to yell George Soros. Can I yell George Soros instead?
I don't know
if he did it, but I really want to.
I'm not certain how it's relevant, but I mean, I guess I can't actually physically stop you in time.
Okay.
Were we even talking about this when it first started screaming up to around $2,000 a coin?
Something like that. I mean, I haven't even looked at Bitcoin prices lately. I mean, I pulled all my shit out of it a while ago.
The huge spike in it, the first huge spike was because a couple of the trading houses, the diverse trading houses, were going to actually start trading in it, sent it through the roof. Yeah. I don't want to rehash
actually,
the highs and lows of Bitcoin.
I just pulled up my old Coinbase app. They're all way down. Bitcoin sitting at 6,005. Ethereum's at $500 and Litecoin is at $99. Litecoin hasn't been under $100 in a long time. So I know some people who still have some significant investments in some of these coins. They're probably not happy. I don't think I'm going to mention that to them. Anyways,
I think Bitcoin's going to be fine. Their futures are being traded on the NASDAQ now. They're going to start stabling and get better.
Maybe, I don't know, but I mean, that's one of the reasons a lot of people were interested in Bitcoin is that it was, you know, there were so few regulations around it, you still could manipulate it. So, I don't know. I just, I'm not surprised given the nature of the thing. And it's like, oh no, somebody was manipulating the price. Really? It's kind of a shame you noticed the pattern with tethered after the fact, because if you notice it while it was going on, think how rich you could be.
Yeah.
So.
You just need to know when Tether was being, yeah. What's the lag time between the Tether bumps out and the Bitcoin increases? That would be wonderful.
Go pull their, like, go on coin, what is it? Like, it's not Coinbase. There's a coin stats website and its name eludes me, but you could easily go back and check the histories of both and line them up.
Like an hour, that would be amazing.
Oh, yeah. You have a little alert go off, buy or sell.
Yeah.
So
Tether just dumped. It's time to buy now before Bitcoin goes up. They'll hear in about 45 minutes.
Yep. All right. Let's move on to this. Got two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. First is an interesting article from TechSpot. They've got it titled Parallel Universe: A List of Alternatives to All Google Products. And I just think these kind of lists are fun because it does give you some ideas. So they've got several alternative search engines listed out here. Cirex, Quant, Merger, DuckDuckGo, Startpage. They've got some Gmail alternatives listed out. ProtonMail and Runbox being the two I immediately recognize. There's a few others in there. They've got some Chrome alternatives, including Firefox, Tor, and Brave. Google Drive alternatives, some YouTube alternatives, and some Google Analytics alternatives. So, you know, hey, this isn't a bad list.
Yeah.
It's not a bad list. It's a good place to start, especially if you're just kind of looking for some alternatives. I know a lot of people are, you know, it's like, oh, I can't use anything Google. Well, then you're going to be using stuff Microsoft or Apple just based on the devices, but... I mean, yes, you can put Linux on your desktop, and I don't know what you're going to do for a cell phone, though, like grab an old Nokia or something, maybe. But, anyway.
The iPhone. You have the iPhone.
Well, you know, Apple's made some announcements on the privacy side that are actually pretty good, and the rumor is they're going to be getting rid of the Lightning connector and going back to USB-C with everybody else, so that could be good. I don't know. I don't like... I'm not pleased with the way Apple runs things either, so I don't know what the right call is. I mean, there's some alternative ROMs out there for Android phones that at least get it fairly clean, but I don't know, because a lot of times, in my experience, and to be fair, it's been a bit since I've really gone hard and heavy into using alternative OSs on Android phones, it's not been the most stable thing in the world. So,
I don't want to give you my name and create a password. Vimeo now sucks. Let's check another one on the list.
Vimeo now sucks? Oh, can you not watch videos without an account now?
Yeah, you have to create an account.
That's shitty.
And no one goes to Vimeo anymore.
I don't know. HookTube was, HookTube's my favorite because you hit a YouTube link that... wants you to sign in or you're in the wrong region or whatever and just change it over to HookTube and it just pops right up. So, anyways, last thing I have for Dojo tonight is a link to one of these GitHub awesome lists. There's a whole trend around making these things, but this one's pretty good. It's a collection of penetration testing resources. So, the first couple of links are different trainings, online class for Metasploit, the OWASP Top 10, penetration testing standard. Then they go into some tutorials on doing exploit development, social engineering. Of course, they got links to things like Kali, Blackblocks, Parrot, ArchStrike. And then it's a whole big-ass list of tools. So, if you're looking for... some different things, some reading. I think they've got some books later lower down this list. Yeah, they've got some security courses, some vulnerability databases. It's just a nice link to get started on if you're dealing with this kind of stuff on a regular basis,
Yeah.
So, good collection of stuff, good places to start. If you're bored on a Saturday looking for something to read or maybe you just, you know, feel like learning how to be a super hacker. No, don't do that. Don't do it that way. You know, actually learn how this shit works. Don't just run the tools and hope for the best. But anyways, that's all I got. My voice is about gone, and I'm about to collapse. So, Madman, closing thoughts.
I found classic Mickey Mouse cartoons with Chinese subtitles.
Oh, okay.
I'm looking at the hook tube link and a few. Oh, that's all in Arabic. This could be funny to watch.
Death to Mickey Mouse.
Are you? This link you've posted is sad and depressing.
I know. It's great, isn't it? That's my closing thought.
Close it out, then. I'll go ahead and add it to the show notes.
Netflix has decided to ban its crews from looking at each other for more than 5 seconds in an attempt to pound Me Too crackdown. So, link will be in the show notes if you want to read that funny, funny article. Cry a little.
How the fuck are you going to do this?
I know.
Eye contact's necessary in acting.
Dude, it's going to be like an autistic fucking festival, man. Every show, like, none of the people are going to be looking at each other. Like, they'll look down.
No, that's what the computer graphics are for, so that they can look longingly at each other for more than 5 minutes. It's like, no, they weren't even in the same room. We just cut the camera angles to do...
That'll be the next step. You watch men and women, separate fucking sets. Can't be on the set together.
There's going to be more Punisher and Daredevil, are you? You should not be happy about this.
Where are the space aliens? Come on, guys.
This is a parody. This isn't true.
I'm voting for the giant meteor in 2020. I don't know about you guys. Anyways.
Yeah.
So listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 Radio subreddit. And the website, of course, galaxy15radio.com. We have a link right on the IRC. In the IRC tonight, we had apparently myself, Sardonyx, who just lurks and doesn't say anything because he may have the IRC up, but we know he's not actually looking at it, the poser. Psychros, who has been on a long rant about the fact that I implied that Sailfish was somewhat Android-based, which apparently it's Linux-based, so my bad. I haven't really dug into that kind of stuff lately. Iron Angel and Madman. That's it. I'm going to hit the Pac-Man sound. So, that's not the Pac-Man sound. Find the fucking button here.